Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott.
Hello.
Sean Priest.
Hey.
And Tim Schwartz.
Hello.
Yes, welcome along to another Tech Talk. Hi, guys. How are you guys feeling this week?
Oh, better than you've been feeling, obviously. But then I am a perfect specimen of manhood. Thank you.
Wow. Not sure what to say about that. But yes, we're definitely better than you've been, Stephen. Glad that you're seemingly better.
Well, thank you. Do you know, that's very kind of you, Tim. I think, Sean. Yeah, it's been a difficult time, but
weak.
I am back.
Okay. Do you feel better?
I had the man flu. So, you know, what do you expect? I was off for a week with the man flu, and I milked it.
Did you have a hot water bottle and crumpets and fluffy slippers?
I did, and my wife was looking after me, making lovely meals.
Nothing better.
It was just joyous. Days on the sofa. You know that thing, though, when you've got the cold, you can't, with any sense, you just cannot get off the sofa. You don't even feel like eating either. Because your appetite goes.
Wow, you must have been ill.
I know, I was. I knew. That's how I knew. I was seriously ill because I couldn't eat anything.
Seriously,
and, you know, it's
you had
horrible.
A cold the same as half of the country.
No, mate. They didn't have it like I had the cold.
Of course,
I'm sorry. Right, coming up on the show this week, because I am back. We are going to get back into our conversations we've been having around RNIB's 150th anniversary, which is actually today as this program goes out. October 16th is
Yay.
RNIB's 150th anniversary. Happy birthday, RNIB.
Makes me feel young for the first time ever.
Yes. Well, you know, I have said it before, and I'll say it again, because I always reuse my lines. I'm very economical that way. I wasn't around for all of the anniversary, but I do remember most of the years. The good years, as I call them, of RNIB. But we're going to get into the conversation this week with Jenny LaFleury from Microsoft. She's the Chief Accessibility Officer. That's coming up, and we have got lots more to come as well on this week's Tech Talk. So, yes, nice to be back in this seat again. Well, I mean, you know, I know I was here on the show last week, so if you don't listen to the Daily Connect, shame on you. Then you were thinking, what's he talking about? Of course, Tim wasn't here last week. Were you, Tim? You were having a pancake feast, I believe.
Well, that's what you guys say. I did have pancakes a couple of times on my holiday, my vacation.
You don't call them holidays, do you?
Well, yes and no. Some people do, but yes, more often than not, it's vacation. But yeah, we did get away for
great story
several days, and I did have some pancakes, but I had a lot of southern fried cooking. It was really good.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Someone get me a bucket. we can't say that, can we? Surely we're not allowed to say names.
Other chicken is available, I believe. Does that make it better? I don't know. Right, so yeah, listen, good to be back, Tim. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to talk.
No, we don't,
because we have got a big interview this week. Jenny is on from Microsoft. She's the Chief Accessibility Officer, as I say. And a lot of you have been getting in touch since I was mentioning that we were talking to Jenny. A lot of you have been emailing in to say, oh, I've got a question for you. Well, you know, I appreciate that. Thank you. That interview, however, was recorded a few weeks ago. We recorded it in advance of RNIB's 150th anniversary. So unfortunately, I couldn't get your questions in because, well, I didn't have a time machine, quite frankly. So I know it's always an excuse, I know, but there you go. So the interview's coming up and we touch on a lot of different subjects. So looking forward to getting into that. But before we do, there is one event that I want to bring up. And I just also should say at this point, I know lots of you have been emailing in lots of different queries, especially around smart meters. Trust me, we will get on to this. This is a story we're actually working on at the minute, getting RNIB to comment on this especially. I know some of you want to hear from RNIB on the subject of smart meters because they're apparently rolling out, but some of you are telling us that, well, yeah, they're rolling out, but nobody knows anything about them. I want to put this to RNIB. I think we all do. I know you've had this issue, Sean.
I've been on the phone all morning and my supplier knows nothing about them. And I'm in arrears with my bill because of misreads of my meter. And they know nothing, apparently. It's like hello, hello all over again.
Oh, dear. Well, this is something that we're going to be on the case of, because I know it's something that a lot of you have an interest in, and well, we do too. So we'll get into that on next week's program, hopefully, assuming that the guy who is due to call me back from RNIB calls me back. And if you're listening, call me back. So there you go. So that's to come. We are also going to get into a lot of your topics as well. I know lots of you asking questions and queries. We'll get into those properly next week. We have another interview as part of RNIB's 150th to come. We might shorten that interview a bit and maybe put the full interview up online just to give us a bit more time, because we only get the hour. So we will try and kind of shoehorn this all in, because there's so much great stuff going on. There's so much good stuff. But as I say, we only get the hour. So we just have to kind of make it work to suit. So that's coming up. If you have sent us an email this week, and I know lots of you have, then thank you for that. I appreciate it. And it will definitely get on next week's programme, because the other thing is we do have Slighted Guy Chris this week. He's not here this week.
Where's Chris? Now everyone's dropping like flies. I don't like it.
Well, he is around. It's just unfortunately he's been covering for me on all my shows. So he's been kind of doing all my work. So he's got enough on his plate.
He's taking over. I told you, you got to watch him.
You know, you take a week off, guys, honestly, take a week off, and you just feel people sidling into position, getting ready to take over. Well, I'm back. Get over it. Right. Let's talk about Google event, because it happened. That's all I'm going to say.
It happened. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, what's the matter with everyone? Yes, it was slightly underwhelming, but, you know, it's a tech event. There's always something there that's good.
So should we maybe talk about some of it then? Do we want to do that?
Yes, I think we should.
What was so good, Sean?
Well, okay, so it was slightly tricky. Now, I don't want to come down on it, because it sounds, you know, it enforces the, Apple fanboys thing. And I don't want to get into that. But I got to say, we sat and we watched it together virtually. And we were slightly underwhelmed. It did seem a little bit flat. Now, maybe that's because we talked about the possible products, the rumours, and we didn't see any of that. In fact, the products that we did see were, it was only three, really, wasn't there? And, of course, we were all expecting the new Pixel 3 phone, which was what, Tim?
It is a new smartphone that does everything that a smartphone should do. It was spectacular.
See, but sure. You could say the same thing about the XS, the iPhone XS and the XR. It's an increment. There was just nothing there that blew me away. There were a couple of software features about the phone which were cool,
I liked.
An interest in.
Yeah.
But that was about it. The hardware itself wasn't really important, but maybe that was the whole point of the event. It's not so much the hardware, it's all about the software, the services. Does anyone really care the CPU and the horsepower in a phone anymore? I don't think so.
Sorry, I'll just jump in here to say this. I thought it wasn't the most exciting event. And I refer to my squashed snail analogy, which is, there was more life in the squashed snail than there was in the event. And I don't think there was any issue necessarily with the products. I think we've just all gotten so used to the kind of products they bring out. There's a similarity. It's not just an Android thing or a Google thing. It's a phone thing. It's a tablet thing. We've seen it all before already. And all we're seeing are small increments in power, and actually, if I'm honest, in some cases with Google products, not so much the phones. I think the phones, I didn't pay a huge amount of attention because I was kind of falling asleep by the end of it, but I did feel that the phones probably had a lot more to offer than anything else they offered, actually. They had the Pixel Slate, which is the new tablet. To me, that was just the iPad being relaunched. It was I'll say one thing, they brought a wireless charger for a phone. That was impressive.
Yeah, that's something
Apple couldn't do that. No, yeah. So that was good. But the phones did look quite nice. They had great cameras on them. I imagine they would be good, and I actually would love to spend some time with a Pixel 3, because I think it would be a really good phone. No mention of dual SIM, which I thought was interesting. Every other phone seems to have gone that way. They haven't done that. But I often wonder with Google if it's more about what the possibilities are, and it's like, this is how it should be, you go and do it. And then it's Samsung and LG and whoever else go off and make their versions of it. I wasn't excited by it. There was nothing there. Well, one thing stood out. And to be honest, it's a bit of an old feature because it's been out for a while. But they built it into the Google Pixel 3 phone and the camera, and it's called Google Lens. And this was the only thing that really stood out for me that said, this is different. In the sense that Google Lens is an app, really, that you go into, and if you were, say, at a train station, maybe that's a bad example, but if you were at, say, a restaurant, and you look at the menu, and there's a phone number, say, on the menu, or there's a information or an email address, you know, you would automatically have that information grabbed into your phone, and you'd be able to use that as a link to email or to make a phone call. If you're in a foreign country and you hold it up to a sign that's in French, you're in France, and you hold up a sign that's French, it will translate it to English live on the screen. And of course, I imagine, because it's Google and because it's built into the phone, it'll all be accessible.
I hope so. Yeah.
I imagine it probably is. So, you know, I don't think there'd be any issue with that. And that actually makes it even more appealing. But the one thing that stood out for me was, and it kind of the only thing that made me wake up from my slumber, was if you point your phone at, say, a pair of glasses, and you think, I really love those sunglasses that guy's wearing, I want a pair of those, you can point your camera at the glasses and it will tell you where they were from. It will actually identify the product. And I thought, that's a really useful thing. And I could see that. Well, I think it is. I think that there are times I've thought, I'd love to know what that is, but trying to describe it on a search engine, you know, like, man I saw once wore glasses and they were kind of nice and I liked them and I'd like to buy them, please. .com. Yes.
If it works like that, then yeah, absolutely. I think the technology is amazing. The advancements in image recognition is, you know, amazing. So the technology is great. I just honestly don't know how much I would use something like this. It does remind me of the Amazon Fire Phone, you know, that flopped. There was a similar thing on that. It was all about ease of shopping and recognizing objects. And I don't know. How hard is it to say, you know, type in some brand of sunglasses? Yeah, but look, the technology itself is fantastic. But no, I wasn't impressed by that. We've got image recognition software all over the place. I was impressed by the screen, what was it called? Call screening option on the phone.
Yes,
I thought that actually was something that was really useful and something I haven't seen before.
Yeah, the call screening, in addition to the Google Lens, I think that was one of, there's another one that I like as well that we'll get to, but the call screening is good because basically what will happen is, where now with your smartphones, whether it's Apple or Android or Google phones, you can screen a call, so you can decline the call to voicemail or even have a pre-designated text message that will send it out. If it is somebody calling from another phone, it'll send a text message saying you're busy, and that already exists. But what this did is went that extra step to say that it'll use the Google Duplex, which is their artificial intelligence that they debuted earlier this year, and it will actually ask the person on the other line, who are you and what are you calling for? And then send you a transcript right there on the screen of what their answers were. And you can choose to then accept the call or decline at the voicemail or block them if they are a caller that you would choose to block, and make that choice based on who the caller is, especially in a case where you don't recognize the number. I think that's obviously what this point is someone who's not in your contacts, you don't recognize the number, and you say, okay, tell me who you are and what you're calling for, and I'll decide whether I want to answer your call or not. I like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's actually a really nice feature. I kind of slammed it a bit, if you remember. Way back, I first heard about it, I thought, what a lot. Because I think that the suggestion was that you could call up a hairdresser, and your phone would call up a hairdresser and say, oh, I'd like an appointment at 12 o'clock on Friday.
Well, you
This is the top end, the evolution of a real true virtual assistant. You know, this is like having your own PA. This is great. The call screening is a early step into that. But, you know, being able to book appointments for dentists or hairdressers or something like this, they have demoed it and it can work. So, yeah, I think it's great. They are leading the field when it comes, you know, compare Siri to something like this and it's not even close.
Well, we'll see.
You are so hard to impress, I tell you.
Do you know, it's one of those things, right? I know if I had a Google Pixel and I started using it and this feature became, you know, something I used a lot, I'd probably be like, this is the greatest feature ever made.
Riz, where are you now? We need you back.
Riz was due to be on with us on this episode, but we couldn't get to Riz in time. So, Riz, we will get you back on, I promise, because I would be interested in your thoughts. I'm sure he's sitting right now screaming.
Seething.
Foaming at the mouth, saying... But no, I think it was a good event in the sense that we saw some more products. We saw the Google Home Hub, which is a new product, utterly awful. It's essentially a product which it doesn't have a camera in it. It's not really for watching anything other than YouTube videos. I'd say this is a kitchen unit, if I'm honest. And even then, I don't know if it would suit, because I think there's better options out there. The Amazon Echo, for example, I think is a much better option. The Echo Show, I should say. It's got a camera in it, at least. You can do video calls. You can probably do more with it.
No. I just think the whole concept of it is a bad idea. You know, I think the beauty of smart speakers and why they've took off is because it's easy. You forget about it. It's audio only. Once you start having to interact with things and having screens, especially, you know, obviously I'm a bit biased from the VI point of view.
I think that's a fair point, actually. Yeah, I mean, Tim, you wouldn't buy one of these Google Home Hubs for fairly obvious reasons, as probably neither would we.
Yeah, not for myself personally, and I don't know that even my sighted wife would have an interest in this. But I think that these devices, the Show and the Home Hub, things like this, and now Facebook's actually getting to this now with the Facebook portal. And I think that these are kind of a niche market kind of thing. I don't know if it's that the mainstream user really wants this or these companies want us to have it. I haven't decided yet because I don't see it as a entertainment device necessarily. This isn't something at, you know, 7, 10 inches, even the biggest one from Facebook is 15 inches. You're not putting these in your living room to watch TV on. This is not what you're going to be using. This is not something you put in your bedroom to watch TV. So I could see this as being something that you use in an office or in the kitchen or in your child's room or something, or something like that, where you're using it for specific things, for cooking, getting recipes, you know, quick chat, quick search of something. But other than that, I don't see a lot of everyday use out of this. So I do agree with Sean on that, that other than maybe some niche situations, I just don't know. I'd rather, if I'm going to watch Netflix, I'm going to watch it on my television. I'm not going to watch it on this 7-inch or 10-inch screen.
But, you know, you're like us. You're old, Tim, and you know that's not how the young are doing it these days.
No, but if you're young, then you've been doing this stuff for years just on your smartphone. That this is a weird middle ground. This 7, 10 inch, 15 inch screen is a weird middle ground, I think, that no one really wants. We can do everything like making calls or searching the internet or whatever on our smartphones, and we've got smart TVs for when we want to watch entertainment, Netflix or YouTube. Where does this fit in? I don't get it.
Yeah, and you've already got a phone that, for the most part now, with them all going to a much larger size, you have 6.1 inches, 6.5 inches. I think one of these was a 6.8 inch screen. So you've got such large screen phones now. Really, a 7-inch screen for something like a Home Hub? Yeah, I just don't get it. Okay, I can mount it on the wall. Really, that's the big difference. I think you both
missed the point though, because the whole point about Google Home Hub was that it wasn't really about entertainment at all. It was more about, I mean, it did mention you could watch YouTube videos and you could speak to it and it would sort of rattle through a recipe for you or whatever. But essentially, it was about controlling your smart devices. It was a one place you could go to switch on your lights and make sure that, you know, I think they suggested you could do things like, you know, are my upstairs switches off or whatever? And they said, yeah, it is. It's all good. It was to try and kind of bring more of a human side, if that's even possible, to all the smart technology that we're using around our house, if you're using it. I think, and I also think that's actually a missed point, because for me and for us, the smartphone is the hub. It's where everything is.
Exactly.
And you know, if you're, I don't know, but since I've started using VoiceOver, I'm using less and less devices. I've got two phones for work, and I barely use the work one. I use everything on my one phone because I have two phones shouting at me all the time. I just want to listen to one. So, you know, having less is better. That's what I would say from a VO point of view. However, if you've got the vision, maybe you will want to do that. But I don't know. I just don't see the point of this thing. It's coming up soon.
We agree. Yes, we do agree, but just maybe for different reasons, but we do agree. No, I get it. From that standpoint, from a VI standpoint especially, maybe we're just not looking at it in that way because we are wanting something that we can just talk to and be done with it. But that being said, in the sighted community, in the sighted world, I just don't know. If you want something that's going to be a hub for your household, for all your smart devices, well, then get a Google Home Mini or Google Home Assistant. Why do we need a screen? Even a sighted person, I don't see why they would want a screen, especially that small of a size. If they're going to want that, then have something they can plug into their television that they can look at this information on their TV screen or something. I just don't understand having a 7-inch screen to get that information when you can ask your Google Home Mini or your Amazon Echo or whatever the same thing and get the same audible feedback from that.
Well, I mean, I would offer... I mean, I know Facebook have brought out the Facebook Portal, which is this, you know, again, it's not a standalone tablet. It's like a tablet, but it's kind of docked into its own system. It's built into a dock, if you like. And I don't really understand what the purpose of that is either. We also don't know anything yet about how it works.
Accessibility-wise,
we don't know anything about that yet.
Yeah, that's does have Amazon Echo technology built into it, so it does have Lady A, so at least we know audibly it will work for us. But yeah, I don't know that there's any type of screen reader involved, if there's something like TalkBack or anything like that in it. I doubt it, but... further accessibility, I just don't know. But it does have a camera. It's got a shutter that you can cover that camera with. It doesn't record, but it does have a camera to talk with. So I don't know. I just, even with Facebook's, because it's at 10 and 15 inches for its standard and its max size, even at those sizes, I just still don't get it.
Well, we shall talk more about it in the coming weeks, I'm sure. We do have to move on, though, because we have a big interview this week. Jenny LeFleury from Microsoft is the Chief Accessibility Officer there. And I got the opportunity a few weeks back to sit down with her and talk about a whole wide range of topics. And the first thing I wanted to do was kind of get a sense of how RNIB in particular had worked with Microsoft and that relationship that had been born and how it actually helped Microsoft in the work that they do. This is, of course, all part of RNIB's 150th anniversary. Jenny, it's great to have you here on Tech Talk.
Thank you for having me.
It is great to talk to you, Jenny, because I follow you on Twitter, not in the stalker sense, but I do follow you on Twitter, and I'm very interested to read about your posts on accessibility. Tell me, first of all, how you got into the job.
So that's a long, winding tale, but the short story, I joined Microsoft in London 13 years ago. I actually joined to work on Hotmail, if people remember that product from years gone. But really got into the disability employee group here at Microsoft through my own deafness, and then joined every other one because I'm really, quite frankly, nosy, and found that really there was just this amazing buzz in many different areas, and accessibility being one of them. And you wind forward 10 years or so, I was offered the job of Chief Accessibility Officer, really to see how we could, with a partnership of many people around Microsoft, take accessibility to a new level. So we've had a fun time over the last few years. We're living into the mission of the company, which is always a good thing.
That's it, yes. And the mission of the company, that's an interesting point. So tell us about Microsoft's view on accessibility and perhaps how that has changed over, say, the last 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. Well, Microsoft's had a long history in accessibility. I mean, accessibility started when I started going through the history books in 97 with Bill Gates. In fact, the first employee group started in the 90s as well. And when I joined, there were six groups of employees all coalescing around different topic areas, whether that was deafness, blindness, autism, ADD. And there was also the first feature was actually 94, which was sticky keys, we think. People may know of another one, but that's the first one we found. So there's been a long history, but I think the, you know, what's really happened in the course of a 20-year history, you've had some boom and bust. We've had some times where we've got it very right and very wrong. But over the last 3 years, we've very much taken an effort to live into how we can empower. And I think shifting it to being far more people, human focused. The mission of the company is to empower every person and every organization to be successful and to achieve more. And I think that just breeds beauty when you think about disability and accessibility. So, you know, the fun has been really figuring out how we can leverage technology to empower. And you know, this community, our community, knows that better than any other, I think. So, yes, it's been a fun ride.
Tell me about the relationship that you may have had personally or that you are aware of with RNIB itself and how that has come to happen and what your feelings are about that.
My gosh, well, I'm British. I may live here in Seattle, but I grew up with the RNIB and the RNID and several other organizations. And I've always looked up to how the RNIB coalesces around blindness, brings folks together, empowers folks themselves with technology and a myriad of things. In fact, when I was a music student many years ago, I had great conversations with RNIB as I was looking to do a degree in music, a master's degree in music and disability. So at all number of levels, I've always been inspired by the RNIB, but Microsoft has also had a very, very deep partnership with the RNIB over the years. And that's, you know, I see it as a win-win. You know, from my perspective, you know, looking at the accessibility efforts here, it's very important for us to learn every single day, every single hour of what is working and what we need to work on. We get invaluable feedback from the community. We get invaluable feedback, whether that's through Twitter, through, you know, emails that you're sending over, quick phone calls that I get, and also just some sense of what you'd like to see in the future and partnering together on future projects as we go forward. So, and we in turn get to share our crazy ideas and get your feedback and you give it. So I think it is really a true partnership between the two organizations that are mutually beneficial. You know, we believe in the direction of where RNIB is going, and it's a very exciting time, I think, in the area of technology, whether that's screen reading, magnification, high contrast, even color blindness filters now in Windows. A lot of being done through that partnership.
Jenny, talk me through the process and the challenges that I can only imagine exist in trying to make all of the products that Microsoft makes. In terms of the software, I think about things like Office 365. That is, I can only imagine it's a huge challenge to make something like that fully accessible to us blind people. Talk me through that challenge and how you aim to achieve that.
I see it more as a responsibility. I think that it is such an incredible tool, Office 365, Windows 10. They're incredible tools that can make a difference in someone's life. And that gives us an opportunity, but also a massive responsibility. And we take that very seriously. So it's a very methodical process. We are looking at every single component of Office, for example, whether that's Excel, PowerPoint, Sway, which is a new part of the Office portfolio, but we love it. I'm really making sure that we're not only reaching minimum bar, we're going above that, and we're actually starting to see some of that goodness begin to come through. And what I mean by that is that we're beginning to see the power of AI now help us with accessibility. Actually, if you build a PowerPoint slide and you pull in an image, that image will have some alt text already attached to it. And you can go in and edit that. You can make sure that it's completely appropriate for the picture. But it's already beginning to help us. The accessibility checker in Office is another one that I think is very powerful. Just the quick ability to check your email or your Word document or whatever part of Office it is to make sure that that document is fully inclusive, fully accessible before you send it out, which is just so important. I have many people not in our community tell me, well, I don't have someone with a disability in my team, and I smile because, as we all know, disability is over 70% invisible. You may not know, but it is your responsibility to make that inclusive and accessible. So yes, I do think it's a responsibility, and I think our job is to live into that. And we're all about complexity. We like complicated and hard things, and it's definitely one of those, but it's the right thing to do, and it's leading to a ton of innovation for us.
It's interesting that you use the word responsibility, and I refer to it as a challenge, and I think that's an interesting distinction, perhaps, because I think about Windows Narrator, which is the screen reader built into Windows, which to myself and my friends for many years was kind of like one of those, yeah, it'll get you started, it'll get you perhaps using Windows, but really you want a big boy screen reader. You want something like JAWS or NVDA to get the job done. And it's interesting, for many years the belief has perhaps been that Narrator has been a bit of a forgotten project. That's changed, though, very recently. Is that because of the kind of feedback that you get from charities like RNIB, but also from the general public who are saying, come on, Microsoft, you need to sort this out, because this could be a viable solution for a lot of blind people who want to start using screen readers, and it's built in and it's free?
I think you've answered your question. I think the Narrator, we very, very consciously and strategically looked at. We've spent years now working on improvements to that, which is an inbuilt free screen reader. We want it to be something that can empower use across the spectrum. It works pretty beautifully now with Edge, Office, and most of our first party portfolio, and we continue to reiterate as it goes through. And we've been really working on a lot of the performance features in it. And so, yeah, it has something that's very, very important to us to empower not just our first party, but also the third party as we go forward, whether that's NVDA, JAWS, and the myriad of others that bring the beauty to the, technology in use, particularly in employment. But yes, it really did come off the back of us sitting down and figuring out how we could take accessibility to a new level and take the feedback from organizations like RNIB.
Can I ask about that relationship with third parties? Because that's a question a lot of blind people generally ask us here on the program, and it is something that comes up a lot. What is that relationship like? I mean, is it the case that Microsoft want to build a screen reader that is available to everyone, which in essence pushes JAWS out? Some criticize JAWS and, VFO, the company that owns it, because of the huge cost of it, compared to something like NVDA, which is free but might also be pushed out by a stronger Narrator. Is that Microsoft's plan, or is it to try and work some way to sort of appease both?
I do believe if you look at the spectrum of deafness, blindness, there is such a wide range. And I think when you're looking at humanity and you look at that application of disability plus human, you get this wide range. And I think that means that you've got a really diverse use of technology. I think where our heads are is how can we empower across the spectrum of use, across the spectrum of expertise, across the myriad of different use cases. What technology can give you is choice. And so I think Narrator gives you one choice. I think JAWS gives you another choice. And our job is to really empower both and more. And so my hope is that you find the technology that works for you, that empowers you, that we're really transparent about that. We don't want to, we're not in the job of excluding. That's not our gig. Our job is empowering. So game on. I think we have that connection, very strong connection with VFO, strong connection with NVDA, which has done a phenomenal job. And our job is to give folks that level of choice. As you go ahead and you look at what you want to do in your day, in your job, and whatever you want to do, I think really it was on us to make sure that Narrator started to become more than that backup that you called out earlier. And we've been able to do that, and we're going to continue with that. But I hope that ultimately, through the mix of tech that's out there, that folks are able to find the right way to achieve whatever goals you've got. And this becomes a tool to enable you to do that.
Now, it's not just Windows 10 and Office 365. You've also been involved in creating some incredible apps as well. I believe in some cases, just as the result of hackathons, workers within your company having the opportunity to just try something out, try something new, be creative, and have come up with some incredible apps like Seeing AI and Soundscape. Tell us about the development of those and what your feelings were when you learned those were being developed, or maybe you decided they were being developed. You tell me.
So when I say we have fun, we genuinely do. In fact, last week was our company hackathon here in Redmond in Seattle. And to say the scale of this thing is kind of overwhelming. We had 23,000 hackers last week, and you're working on a number of different projects. In the Ability Hack, we had over 200 projects last week, well over 200. And that's incredible when you think that just 4 years ago, we started this thing internally at Microsoft with just 10 projects in my Ability Hack. And so the progression there has been phenomenal, and Seeing AI was one of those. Seeing AI came in 2 years ago, a beautiful team, including some folks that are on my team, some folks like Ann Taylor, who joined my team several years ago from the NFB, and Mary Ballard, who runs my innovation. And they walked around Microsoft campus with phones taped to their heads, and we all thought they were bonkers. But you know what they were working on was really how you could read the menu in our cafe using the phone camera technology, and a combination of that with AI. A year later, we launched that, and now I think we're running around 5 million pictures being taken with Seeing AI so far. So it's an incredible product. And, you know, I get daily emails, and as I'm gently stalking on Twitter, just to follow your lead there, I see stories every day on that. And I think it's a true example of how a team can come together and really just imagine a different future and, you know, get the tools out of the toolbox in the tech cupboard and see what you can do with them. And, you know, I see that every single year. Soundscape was slightly different. Soundscape was actually a very conscious research project that started in the UK with two folks, because the best things, of course, do come from the UK.
Indeed.
And it was a wonderful guy called Amos Miller, who is a architect here at Microsoft. And he wanted to be able to take his daughter to London, to the Natural History Museum, and be able to just get up on the morning and decide to do that and go. And how could you build a 3D audio soundscape to enable you to go from A to B? And so that one's taken some years in the making, but we're excited now to see that one out there and people giving us some great feedback on places they've been able to go and also things they want to see from that app going forward. So I love how innovation comes from lots of different places. We love our hack culture. We love our research culture. And honestly, a lot of these ideas, actually, in fact, both of those projects were ideas of two Brits. One was Saqib Shah, who is a developer in the UK, who was one of the co-founders of Seeing AI. And the other was Amos Miller. And so it's great to see how they've now progressed and launched and seeing the impact. And my job is to help to push those, to make sure that they get through all the obstacles that any little startup does have, even when it's in a big company, and get them out to market, and to see what the impact can be.
you used the word market there, and I think that's a really important word to think about here, because we are all consumers. You know, we may be blind or partially sighted or have additional disabilities, whatever they may be, but we still have money to spend and we need to make a choice. And it's always very interesting to me to look at how the market has changed over the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, I remember when the iPhone came out, thinking, that's it, I'll be an Apple guy for the rest of my life because I've got this wonderful MacBook and this wonderful iPhone and all of that stuff can be accessible. And then Microsoft start taking accessibility in a whole new direction, really focusing on Narrator now. And you know, not only that, I've got the options of JAWS and NVDA, as you say, I have that choice. But all of that makes me see so much more choice available to me, and I think that's a really good thing, and you should be recognised for that. In fact, you were recognised for it. You won your organisation, the Microsoft, it won the prestigious Helen Keller Award for inclusion efforts from the American Foundation of the Blind. What was your thoughts on winning that?
Incredible honour. I think it's very humbling to stand on stage next to colleagues from across the community. Harbin Gurma won an award just after me and Microsoft. And I think it's very humbling to be recognized because we really do feel that in some ways we're just really getting going, even 20 years in. And there's so much ahead of us. I do like the adage that there's far more ahead of us than behind us. And so I think we've in many ways sort of hit the tip of the iceberg of what's possible going forward. But it's humbling. I think it's recognition that we're on the right path and keep going. And we really do intend to do that. And whether that's hiring talent, because ultimately we cannot do this if we don't have amazing expertise and talent in our organization. And the talent is folks with disabilities. If you're going to build accessible products, events, whatever it may be, you need that talent right the way through to amazing innovations like Seeing AI and everything in between. That's really what we're looking to do. So, yes, it's a fun time. And it was very, very humbling to stand there with Kirk Adams and the amazing organization and feel that. So we took it as motivation.
Let's talk about the future. Because, you know, as you say, there are so many things coming forward. You're right, there is far more ahead of us than behind us, for sure. But I wonder what that future looks like to you. And I'm not looking for spoilers here. I'm not going to try and get you to tell me what Windows 11 will look like, right? I'm not looking for that. But what I am wondering is, some might want me to ask you that, I won't. But I wonder what you think the future looks like for people with visual impairments and disabilities more widely. In say 10, 15 years' time? That's a big question, I know, but you must have thought about it.
Heck yeah. I mean, I think of course we have, and I do think that it's one of those really thrilling times when in the tech industry when I have a toolbox of stuff that I think could really lean into that mission of empowerment, and I think that has incredible ramifications. It gives us a responsibility and an opportunity. And I think the opportunity is in many ways brought to the fore by AI, artificial intelligence. And I think that there is so much there that we're beginning to unearth of possibility. We're beginning to see it with all-to-all text. We're beginning to see it with real-time captioning. Really just brought to the fore by Seeing AI. And so we put out actually a grant program to see what others can do as well. I don't think it's just about what Microsoft is and what we're going to create. I think it's now what others can create using some of these tools. So we put out an AI for accessibility program, which is a $25 million 5-year program to give grants to organizations and individuals, whether you're in your garage devving something or you're a bit of a maker. Or you're an organization to see what others can do, leveraging some of the same, exactly the same toolkits as Seeing AI is using and others. So I think for us, Microsoft, I think our job is to continue to ensure that what we're producing, you can trust, you can use, it's inclusive. We're accountable for that we get all the right information on the website to ensure that If you want to know the latest on any product we have, it's right there at your fingertips. We're going to continue to build a culture of inclusion. And forgive me, that is my golden puppy, my golden retriever. He's giving us noise in the background. But I think that, you know, when it comes to tech, I'd love to see a world where accessibility is in many ways ubiquitous. It's something that is just part of your tech. It's you pick up your machine in the morning and it is all there ready for you. You're going to the Microsoft store and you're picking up something that just works. And accessibility is the lens where we're able to innovate. You know, we're beginning to see that. We're beginning to see innovations really come through designed for accessibility that are going to impact everyone. And I think that's the power, honestly. That's the reason that we think this is the coolest space to be in. And I think I have the coolest job.
It sounds like the coolest job, yeah. No, that sounds fantastic. I'm really glad that you've come on today and talked to us about all of this. Can I just get personal for a second, Jenny? Now we're pulling back the curtain here on Microsoft. Let's pull the curtain back on you, if you don't mind. You know, I'm sitting here, the visually impaired guy, using JAWS, using all these systems to make my job happen. Tell me about you, because you've got... Are you profoundly deaf?
Yep.
So
yes, I am.
So are you? So tell us, because we're on Skype just now. We're talking on Skype, and just so the listener understands, we can't see each other. Not that if I had the visuals on, it would make any difference to me. but you are. Am I right in saying that what I'm saying to you is being captioned?
Yes, I have an amazing cartographer, a captionist. Sorry, sitting here. Typing the words on an Edge browser window that I'm looking into. So I lag behind you by a millisecond, really, because she's so good. Yes, I'm literally reading your words.
That is quite incredible. And clearly the Scottish accent is coming over fine.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm sure my British and Americans cause challenge as we go through as well. I haven't said awesome yet, so I feel good.
Not yet. Just one final question for you, Jenny, because I know this is a question a lot of our fans of the show will want me to ask. When are you getting rid of the ribbons in Windows programs?
Oh, crikey. The ribbons, I had so much feedback on many years ago when I came into this. But Office 365 is now just the best, most usable product. I would urge you to have fun with it. Embrace the ribbon. Embrace it.
Embrace
it's good for
ribbon.
You, I promise.
We shall make that a hashtag, I think. Embrace the ribbon. That's a very positive message. Jenny LeFleury, thank you so much for doing what you do. I think it's important that, you know, whilst we challenge as much as possible and we give as much feedback as possible, we also just take a moment to say thank you for all the wonderful work that you and your team do to make your programs accessible. And we would say that to all of the companies who make their products accessible and spend their time. Jenny LeFleury, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Embrace the ribbon. I don't know what to think of that. I'd understand what she's saying, but oh, it's so difficult.
Yeah, I get where she's coming from, but it's just, I'd like to embrace it, but it's just not easy to dive into. I can use it, but wow, yeah.
A couple of things I want to pick up on. I mentioned VFO in there. VFO is now Vispero, which is the company which is an amalgamation of JAWS, Freedom Scientific, who make JAWS, AI Square to make Zoom Text, Optilec, and some other companies as well. So it's now called Vispero. And also since that interview, Skype 8 was released, and a lot of you emailed in to say, ask her about Skype and what they're doing with Skype. Well, unfortunately, we didn't have the information about Skype at the time we did the interview, but we do hope to get Jenny back on. She's certainly willing to come back on the show at some point. And she's not frightened to answer questions, which is great. So thank you so much to Jenny and everyone at Microsoft for what they did and getting this conversation happening. We hope to continue it in the future here on Tech Talk. And of course, here's to another 150 years of, well, Microsoft and R&IB, I think. That would be great. Again, I won't be around to see it, but, you know, that's life.
Can't see it now, it's fine.
Right, so let's Yeah, I know. I bought something this week.
Oh, no, really?
I'm so surprised.
It's still in its box. Can you hear it?
Unboxing.
Ooh. Oh, I've got a strange feeling I know what this is.
Every time we're receiving, I have a strange feeling. Oh, wait.
Well, no, look, I'm still getting over a cold. Don't make me laugh this week, right? Okay, so my box contains a beautiful, brand new, third-gen Echo Dot.
Oh, copied me. Ah, amazing. You're going to love it.
Well, I haven't opened it yet, but I know you've got one, so tell me all about it. Is it great?
It is. It is great. And I don't know if it's just great because it's just a dot, but bigger. And I love the dot anyway. Yeah. So, look, the main difference on the Amazon Echo Dot third generation is just purely the audio, really. It's had a slight redesign. It does feel heavier. It's slightly bigger. It's a bit more curvy.
There you go, fat-shaming Lady A again. My goodness.
I know. Well, I can't help it. She's stacking it on.
She's voluptuous, yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it does
Beyonce
feel...
on us.
It feels more substantial. And wow, the audio quality, if you compare it to the original or the second generation Dot, it's night and day. I mean, it sounds really nice. Of course, it's not hi-fi. It's not going to be a Bose or a Sonos, but it does sound... It will fill a small room. I love it. I love it. It does sound really nice.
I'm looking forward to trying it. Tim, we were having a conversation through the week between us on WhatsApp, and I remember you saying something like, your wife won't let you buy one. How's that conversation going?
It's slowly maybe getting better. Hopefully you guys can help me with this. Because
we will. We'll do that.
I'm selling her on the audio quality of it that Sean was just talking about. And if Sean can prove to her that the microphones are better so that maybe it responds to you better when music is playing or if it's louder and that it will hear you use the wake word better or hear things, you know, more clearly, I think she could be sold because our Echo Dot isn't too bad that we have. We have an Echo Dot second generation, but I think I could convince her to upgrade that. But the one we really want to upgrade is our Amazon Echo because we have a first generation of the Echo. And sometimes she has to scream at it all kinds of different ways to get it to answer her or any of us. And so if the mic, well, if the microphones pick up the voice better and respond in a better way, she might be sold.
Does she listen, Tim?
She claims she does, yes. So
oh, speak, in that case,
speak
yes,
directly
absolutely
to her. Yes.
The microphones are amazing. Let me just say, actually, they've cut down the microphones on the Dot 3 from 7, which is the original one had, down to 4. But I've noticed no difference. It hears me just as well. Of course, look, if you're playing something, if it's louder audio, then you do have to raise your voice to be heard. Yes. Same on my Echo second gen and my Echo first gen.
Is it better for, audiobooks is the thing I would use it for probably more than anything else. I'm not going to listen to music on it. It's probably not really that kind of device, but it sounds to me like podcasts, audiobooks.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the Echoes are a bit overkill just for that. They are more for the music side. I think this is perfect for radio, bedside cabinet, you know, listening to audiobooks. They're great. The original Dot was great for connecting to external speakers, but the inbuilt speaker it had was tinny, wasn't great for that sort of thing. I could barely hear it, and I've always got it on volume 10. But this one, it sounds really good. It will fill a small room. It's great. And for the price, $49.99, it's a bargain. Don't know if you need it to replace all your, you know, if you've got other dots. I wouldn't say you need to rush out because it's exactly the same function-wise, you know. There's no new features, really. It just sounds so much better.
More tactile?
Yes, it does have all the buttons on the top now. So you've got the 4 buttons on the top, and they all have little embossed symbols on them. So plus for the volume up, minus for the volume down, and something on the mute button. I don't know what it is. How often do you use the buttons anyway? But yes, there are slight design changes. It's a fabric finish on it now, so that's quite nice. Look, at the end of the day, its biggest competitor was the Google Home Mini, and it sounds better than the Google Home Mini.
Wow.
It's got far
wow
more bass. It's got more punch to it. It does make the Google Home Mini sound tinny, next to it.
Coming from you, that is high praise because we know how much you like the Google Home Mini. So, yeah.
Yep, I've got two Google Home Minis. Sarah loves them. My partner loves them. We've got one upstairs, one in the living room. They do sound a lot better than the Echo Dot. But the Dot 3 now trumps that one. So until the next Google Home comes out, it's a constant technical leapfrog, isn't it?
Yeah, well, honestly, you'd think they were doing it deliberately in some way to perhaps encourage us to buy more of these things. It's ridiculous. I look forward to hearing more about that. That sounds great. And certainly I'm looking forward to unboxing mine. Ho-ho, that's coming soon. So, yeah, I'll get into that. Just a quick word on Siri shortcuts, Tim. I was going to challenge you on the show to try and explain in a very short space of time all about that, but I don't think we've got the time, so I think you'll get let off the hook on this one. But it is something that some of our listeners are getting in touch with us about. I had a scan through the inbox this week, and we got a request in for a bit of a review of them. So instead of doing a 2-minute roundup, which would be a lot to ask, maybe next week you should just do a big full review. I'm only kidding. I think we should talk a bit about them, because if I'm honest, I don't fully understand Siri shortcuts or what the benefit is. To me, it just seems that what we've been given is. It's like Lego, to me. It's like we've been given a box of Lego, yes. And instead I just want to, have the cathedral built. I just want to have the cathedral. I don't want to build the cathedral. I just want to have it. So it's one of those kind of situations. Other Lego sets are available. Is there a cathedral one? I don't even know.
Lost me.
Yeah. You can tell I'm just back.
To be honest, I think something like Siri Shortcuts, when it comes to the Shortcuts app, I think it's something you do need to actually watch someone build a one so you get the idea of the concept and the process. So I think it is ideal for a feature, really.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, Sean, how many YouTube videos and websites have you and I researched, just independently trying to figure out, okay, how does this work? How do we build it? What do we do? That being said, the quick answer is there is a gallery of shortcuts that are already there that you can go through. There are websites out there where people are creating these and sharing these. So even if you don't know how to make it yourself, there are ways to get a hold of them. A lot of apps are incorporating them automatically. So yeah, it is rounding itself out to be something very nice and useful, but we will try to get into that more in depth next time.
Yeah. Keep your emails coming in, and I promise we will get to them next week. We will maybe shorten our interview down a little bit. We've got Netflix's own Erica Cram coming on next week. Actually, do you know what? We kind of do want to hear what she's got to say.
Yeah.
Just like Jenny, we want to hear what Erica's got to say about Netflix, because we get some very interesting news about audio description in particular on Netflix and some new things they're doing. And I have to say, this is not something I even heard about. I've not seen anything read about. And so far, I think we've managed to keep this as a bit of an exclusive to ourselves. So that's coming up on next week's Tech Talk. That'll make you listen.
Cliffhanger.
You'll be here anyway. Yeah, doof, 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 doof. That is it for our show this week. Thank you so much for being here. Tim and Sean, as always, great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
And remember, and keep in touch on the email, listen to the podcast, tell 10 of your friends to tell 10 of their friends to tell, you get the point. Catch you next week.